Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. This is Sister Awareness, and tonight I will be discussing the transition from civil rights to human rights and how it applies to our situation here in the United States. We have an upcoming election starting in November. Who will you vote for? Will you vote? And what purpose do voting serve? How has voting helped us in the past? What we must do right now? What is more important? Is it more important to liberate ourselves and not give our consent to the humiliations and crimes against humanity? This will be our discussion for tonight's topic. We will try to meet every Sunday night around this particular hour to discuss our political situation here in the United States. Good afternoon, caller. Last four digits, 3675. You're on the air. Who am I speaking with this afternoon?
Hello, Sister Elaine. This is Brother Darren.
Greetings, Brother Darren. Thank you for joining us this afternoon. Just tonight, what we're going to do, we're just going to have a conversational tone and talk about different issues that's going on in our areas. I know you're in Baltimore. I'm in Georgia. And if you have any questions pertaining to human rights or international human rights law, feel free to ask. But tonight's piece will be just a conversational tone.
No problem.
What's some of the things, Brother Darren, that's been on your mind? Tell me about what's going on in Baltimore.
One of the biggest things we're trying to do is just get the people to get involved in how to reach the people. That's one of our biggest goals right now, because we know what we're trying to communicate. We just need to find a method to communicate it to the people where they're at.
Yes, yes, yes. Tell me about some of the things that you have been doing in Baltimore. How long have you been an activist? And just tell me about some of the things that you've been involved in your area. And then we'll talk about the conditions of Black people in Baltimore and some of the things that they're up against.
Okay, so myself and a team of others comprised of men and women have been going there to hand out flyers, to meet and talk with them, and just to try to get them engaged. I've been an activist, I would say, about 5 years, and I've always also been an activist for Straight Black Pride here in D.C., and every one thing just led to another. Different connections, dots connecting.
Okay. So what are some of the things that's going on in Baltimore that is challenging? What are some of the challenges of the people in Baltimore, and how are the people handling those challenges? Let's talk about housing. Let's talk about employment. How are the children doing in school? Are there any recreational things for them to do? Tell me a little bit about the conditions of Baltimore.
Whoa. Okay. So I haven't researched all of that.
Well, how long have you been living there?
Oh, I live in Southern Maryland. I'm like 40 minutes from Baltimore.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about the conditions there.
Well, Southern Maryland, how can I say it? Specifically PG County, we're more programmed to go to school, get a good education, and get a nice job. So the activist part down here isn't accepted as readily because people think they have succeeded. So that's a struggle in itself for people to think that there's a bigger war going on, because either it's cognitive dissonance or it hasn't hit their front door yet.
Okay, okay, okay. So, in your area, you're saying there are not as many challenges in Baltimore?
No, there's not as many challenges down in Southern Maryland, PG County, as there are in Baltimore. And you can just see the difference just by visiting.
Okay, okay, okay. I do see what you're saying. But in terms of the poverty in Baltimore, what are some of the things that you're seeing in terms of housing? Is there still a lot of gentrification? I know I was there. I was in that area. I toured from, I think I was in between Washington, Baltimore, Philadelphia for about 2 weeks a couple of years ago. And I do know that in those areas, in those cities that I was in, I saw a lot of gentrification going on. And I was there in about 2009, 2010, somewhere in there. And I saw a lot of gentrification going on, a lot of boarded up homes where you could tell there were black communities. In Baltimore,
right.
I know there was like one section where that wax museum was that was boarded up. So I did see a lot of areas where our people are, and you can see the infrastructure has deteriorated. What are some activists on the ground doing about that? I mean, how are they approaching that?
Well, there, from what I see, we were the only ones up there. Like on the 4th of July, we were in a certain part, and it just so happens that the Black Lives Matter group came in on a bus full of them. And you could see that what they did was organized, and even they received a police escort. So you're talking about the activists, but police escorted them through their parade. We saw firsthand how that was controlled opposition. I used to travel up there a lot from D.C., Southern Maryland, and you could see the gentrification because the waterfront looked, I mean, they got brownstones on the waterfront now, like in New York. But when you go across the highway and you see nothing but low-income housing. Now, the one thing I can say about Baltimore, they have a very dense population of low-income housing right near the waterfront. So that's prime spot. But it's a lot of us there, so we can never get them engaged. We can probably do some things.
Yes, yes. Well, one thing that we need to get our people immersed in is the fact about their identity and the political missteps, and how important it is that each family understand that they have human rights. That's where we have to start. On this journey, I've seen that our issues derive from the fact of the matter that we don't know international human rights law, we don't know our rights, and we don't know how those rights apply to us currently and historically. So that's one of the biggest issues. Every Afro-descendant here in the United States need to know that we have a body of rights that supersedes those meager rights that was supposed to liberate us, and those are the civil rights. Right now, we're in a transition period politically where we're transitioning from the awareness of who we are as a population. Our identity has been masqueraded and formulated in a way that made us the equivalent of simple minorities, like an immigrant. When the fact of the matter is that our ancestors were here before these Europeans came.
Right.
The people now who are operating now, they're operating under the old laws. And these people, as a matter of fact, these people who are operating now, they're no more than what their ancestors were. They're settlers. And what they did was an act of war. They invaded this area. And when they got here, they encapsulated the peoples that were here into a social construct that rendered them disposable. And we've been a disposable population ever since. So we can't utilize their laws, the conqueror's laws, to liberate ourselves. We're going to have to step outside of the jurisdiction that they created for us to secure themselves as the wealth hoarders of the United States. They secured their position in terms of wealth, power, and resources, and they transfer that wealth and that power down to their descendants, where we have nothing. So politically, right, we have to stop thinking in terms of this black-white construct that has been put before us, where everything is about racism. No, the issue is beyond racism. The issue is racism is a derivative of colonialism. It's a derivative of crimes against humanity. It's a derivative of apartheid and occupancy. And those are the issues that we have to deal with. And in order to deal with those issues, we have to do a whole 360 when we think about ourselves politically. The first strike that's against us, what entails a reparative remedy, is the idea of the fact that we're a simple minority. We're not. We're a people. Peoples have a right to self-govern, to self-determine, and to control their wealth, resources, their human capital, and their labor in the territories in which they occupy. That's the first step. That's what we have to understand. So when people are in terms of using this social construct, the construct of politics, that's outdated, and it's not going to help us. As a matter of fact, it's genocidal. The civil rights era, the policies are benign neglect, dependency, and de-development. That's what those the current and forced assimilation, because we have our own culture, we have our own language, we had our own land, and our ancestors expressed that they wanted to have their own and they wanted to be self-governed. They expressed that after slavery. They expressed that to Sherman. So all of these things have to be revisited. We have to look at the power relationship. So when we're practicing politics, we're not practicing politics in supporting people who just want to you know, gloss over the human rights violations that we suffer.
Right.
We need to look at politicians or leadership, not necessarily politicians, because these black politicians, they're going to support the hegemonic process. They're not looking out for our best interest because we don't pay them. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So what we have
right.
to do is fight for a full change in the political relationship between us and the United States. We have to do a legal and economic and a political partition if we are going to survive. We're not in a position, in a place where we can continue to think that we're going to vote our way out of this, what we're in. We're not going
right.
to be able to pray our way out. We're going to have to be strategic, and we're going to have to surgically remove ourselves from the position that we're in. And with that, I'm going to give the floor back to you for a response.
Well, I totally agree. I mean, I learned something from that, and I totally agree. So the sisters and brothers that I know in Baltimore, is this being recorded so I can pass to them to hear?
Yes. Yes. There are, yes. As a matter of fact, it is being recorded, and they will be able to call. Matter of fact, I will send you the link because I'm not very astute with the Blog Talk Radio broadcast procedures yet, but I intend to do so because I'm going to use this platform as a tool to teach human rights. Some of the things that our activists, people who are out front and center, the people who want to do something but don't know what to do or know how to do, there's a right. educational piece that goes to what's going on with U.S. Afro descendants here in the United States. We're mm-hmm. under a genocide. The policies right. are genocidal. The politics are genocidal. We're going to have to put ourselves in a position where we control our own systems, where we have our own institutions. We should be controlling the education for our children. You don't hand your children over to the oppressor to educate and think he's going to educate your children to develop a society so the next generation could be successful. That's not going to happen. We're going to have right. to take control of our own institutions, our own healthcare system, okay? Mm-hmm. Our own healthcare system. We're not the same people. Our body makeup, our chemistry is not the same. Our psychology is not, our dichotomy is not the same. Our psychology is not the same. So why are we mm-hmm. allowing these people to control the institutions that we need? It's suicidal. Our politics right. is not the same politics as a European who enslaved your ancestors. We got to stop that. It's not mm-hmm. about, oh, they just don't like me because I'm black. It's beyond that. Mm-hmm. They hate you because they look at you as a disposable piece of property that they no longer need. We are a mm-hmm. surplus population, and that's how they look at us. We have to reinstate our humanity on the human family tree. So it can't be business as usual. Do you understand what I'm saying to you, brother?
Yes, totally. Totally. A lot of talking points.
Yes, yes. So we're not a simple minority. Okay? We're not. We are indigenous to the United States. We are a people. And what is a people? A people is a legal and political unit. As a people, you control your area. You control your human capital. You dictate the education for your children. We have a right to practice what they call internal sovereignty. That means we self-govern ourselves, even down to our criminal justice system. Okay, we have rights. We have human rights. We have human rights under the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, Article 1. That's the right to self-determination.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Article 27. We have a right to our culture and to utilize our own culture to secure land rights. Article 1 of the Economic and Cultural Rights. We have a right to self-determination. We have a right to control our own resources.
Mm-hmm.
All right, as indigenous people. Indigenous means that we were here before settlers got here.
Right.
We were here. Therefore, we should have been treated like the Native Americans. The United States is practicing apartheid against us right now.
Mm.
Because of that fact. But you have mm-hmm. Negro politicians, you have misleadership, even these so-called conscious misleadership Negroes, who mm-hmm. at the end of the day miss that point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We have to assert our human rights. You have local rights, you have state rights, you have federal rights, but on top of that, the top layer that covers, that umbrellas all of those, are your human rights. Your human rights supersede those because those are God-given rights. You derive
right.
your civil rights from the state who recently enslaved you.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not going to get justice here in the United States.
Right.
We're going to have to step outside of that box. How do you do that? That means we're going to have to withdraw consent, just like Brother Ramzu said. That means we are going to have to, instead of running out here to vote, we're going to have to withdraw our consent from the United States. That's what we're going to have to do. That is what we're going to have to do.
Okay.
Brother, I do have some more callers on the line that I want to acknowledge. There's a person by the last four digits, 8750. Would you please introduce yourself and let me know where you're from? Caller from the number 301-875-8751.
Hi, how are you? My name is Donna Pope. And a
colleague
of mine, he invited me to this conference call, and I was just listening to what you guys were saying, and I'm a part of the Human Rights Movement, reparationsbank.com.
Yes.
As you all are. So I'm just in on the call. Because I was invited in. And
okay,
good evening to everybody.
Thank you, thank you. Yes, indeed. And I support what Brother Ramzu is doing 100%, and he is legally correct in his assessment. He is correct in what he's doing, and international and human rights law supports what Brother Ramzu is doing, my sister. And I'm going to tell you what bodies of law that supports what he's doing and what we're doing as well. I'm part of a movement that began in 2000 and I would say 2013. My background is I have a interdisciplinary bachelor's of arts in justice studies. I also have a Master of Science in Criminal Justice, and I studied approximately 2 years under two international lawyers, two black international lawyers that are international lawyers here in the United States. One of the brothers' name is Musa Danfodio, and the other one is Mustafa Ansari. He is one of the ones who pioneered the Afro-Descendant Institute for Human Rights. And that is where I cut my teeth on international law, where I applied it to, where we applied it to our social dynamics and social problems here in the United States. And I studied under them for 2 years, certified in 2015. And from that, me and two other colleagues of mine, we stayed on board, especially the sister. She's very good at the numbers. She's the one who put the statistics and crunched the numbers to support what we saw, that the United States right now is violating our human rights and practicing colonialism and apartheid. We can prove that beyond a shadow of a doubt, specifically, and we have done it with the numbers. So the issues are strictly human rights violations, and we can't continue to say, oh, this is just a civil rights issue because it's not, and they're just doing this because they're racist. Yes, they are racist, but it's deeper than that. We're being warred upon as a people. The acts that have been definitely committed against us, the acts of violence, there is the equivalent of acts of attrition, hybrid warfare, and soft war tactics that they use in different areas of the world, such as Syria, such as Eastern countries. Those are some of the things that we're experiencing right now. There are some other things that has been done to us, but I won't share that right now. But those are some of the things that stand out with these last two police brutality murders, like the one that happened here in South Georgia. That evidence complicity of the state and a state violation of their state responsibility in both of those cases. So when you know international and human rights law, you can identify violations and you can see the degree of the atrocities that are going against us, that are going on. But when you don't know how people that's positioned, that are encapsulated like we are, how they alleviate themselves of human rights violations, we're just chasing out. Now, when someone says either vote for Trump or vote for Kamala Harris, why should we be in a position where we vote for the devil or the witch? Is that feasible? Anybody? I want to know, is it feasible?
No, this is Brother Darren.
I'm sorry, I had my phone on mute. I understand what you're saying, but go ahead, Darren. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. You're good.
Me,
go
myself
ahead,
personally,
sister.
I was brought up to vote, okay? And then my parents, they marched and everything. So I'm just new to this, you know. All my life I believe in civil rights and everything. Right now I'm getting into the human rights aspect as though I should have been. And if it would have been taught in school, if my parents would have been allowed to tell us about the human rights, then I would really know. I think for my parents it was more or less, and if they were still living, my dad would be like 90, my mom would probably be 88. So in that time, they didn't cause up too much stare because my parents were right beside Martin Luther King, and they know all about Malcolm X and everything. So I'm just trying to pick up from where my parents were marching, because I used to march for them because they were older people, and now I'm at the point to where you no longer have to march. It's time to stand up. But if I have to vote between one of the two evils, I definitely would not vote for Trump. If I have to stand in some kind of way, you know, for the next 4 years, I'm just going to be honest with you. You know, maybe I'm on the fence. I don't know what I am. But I would definitely not vote for Trump. And if I'm going to vote, it's going to be for Harris and Biden. You know what I mean? And I had a colleague of mine tell me something about the lesser evil, so you're going to vote for the lesser evil. At this point, pretty much, ma'am, I am, because I know Trump needs to get out of there because he's a straight-up racist. And I'm really, at this point in my life, I don't care what's her name, Kamala. I don't care what she did. I just don't want Trump up in there. So, yeah, that's kind of where I am. And if I'm wrong for feeling that way, I have to take a stand one way or another.
No,
then you're going to let Trump come back and be president once again. If you do vote and you're choosing the opposite opponent, it seems as though here with the human rights thing, you're still wrong. I believe my right is to do the best thing I can do for myself and my kids. And, yes, I'm all 100% for human rights. But at the end of the day, if we got to get Trump up out of there, we got to get him out of there. And that's where I am. Because if we do nothing and don't vote, he's going to come back another year, another 4 years. And I myself, I don't want that. I have biracial children, and I do not want that. And my kids know I taught them the very little of stuff because they are a lot biracial. But at this point in time in their lives, they're seeing everything for themselves. They're now young adults. You know what I'm saying? Seeing it for
let me interject.
I'm just trying to do
sister.
The right thing for myself and for the legacy that I'm leaving.
Now, let me ask you this. Now, you stated that you are helping with reparationsbank.com, correct?
Yes, I am Human Rights Policy Officer Donna Pope.
Wonderful, wonderful. Mm-hmm. And I respect your position, but this is where I am, because I've looked at the numbers and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I respect
you.
You've been doing this for a long time, ma'am. I've only been doing this since February.
Yeah, yeah. But I respect your position. I respect anybody who feels like that if you want to go stand in the polls, that's your position, and I respect that. And I do understand how important it is to vote, because people has drilled it.
Right.
People have risked their lives for us to vote.
Hello?
They've risked their lives. Hello? They've risked their lives for us to vote. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, it's a catch 2020, because I definitely know my parents were beside Martin Luther King when the dogs were sent out and all that other stuff. People have risked their lives for us to vote. And that's kind of where I am. I mean, I'm all for the human rights. I'm all for a big change. I'm all for everything. But I just don't. I mean, no, I'm no longer right there with Martin Luther King. I've picked up where Malcolm X left off, and that's where I am right now.
Is Sister Elaine still on the phone? It sounds like she dropped.
I'm not sure, but maybe I shouldn't have said nothing. But okay.
No, so I think she, or I don't know, but I'll just say my piece on it. At this point in my life, I can honestly say I would not vote, because, and the reason why I say that now is, for the last 7 years, I've had a chance to hear Dick Gregory, Francis Chris Wilson, all the activists, all the historians, everybody who's somebody, Judge Joe Brown, all of them speak. And one thing that sticks with me at this point is Dick Gregory saying, voting for the lesser of two evils is still evil, which makes you evil for voting for them. And I totally get it, because like Ramzu says, blood is on our hands by participating and voting for these people, because we're giving them our consent to do whatever they do. Whoever wins, whoever loses, they're both evil. Hello?
I'm here.
Oh, okay. So to me, it's like you got somebody who's going to use a rope and somebody who's going to use a machine gun. So that's why I totally get why we have to go hard. And this is prime time, because everybody recognizes that both sides are evil. So everybody wants solutions now. So this is how our prime time to step in and give them that solution. And I yield the floor.
Oh, yeah. And I'm all for it. I'm all for that. Don't get me wrong, Brother Darren. I'm all for it. You know what I'm saying? At the end of the day, you know, if you don't vote, I mean, this is just where I am mentally. If you don't vote, then Trump will be back in. And all the people that didn't vote the last term and everything, that landed Trump up in there. You know what I mean?
Right.
So
I want to say that.
You know, but, regardless of whether the human policy thing goes through, and we're fighting, and we are, but at the end of the day, When it doesn't go through, we're still back at the same stalemate page. And I just don't want Trump back in there. I don't want him back.
I don't fault you for that. So here's where people keep saying how people died for the right to vote. They died to try to break free from this system. A right to vote was part of that reason, but we've seen it propel the right to vote. Because we can also say how people died to be free to propel the human rights movement.
100%.
And we would be totally right.
Yeah, 100%. 100% right. I'm not knocking it in any way. I'm just saying I'm going through a dilemma of a catch 2020 at this point.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I want to break free. You know, I don't want my kids to go through stuff that I went through. I never want my kids, well, they have been called a nigger and they knew what to do about it. But I just feel as though everybody needs to be free. This whole every 50 years you got to freaking vote there. The Congress has to vote for black people to vote. I mean, that's crazy. all the whole system is corrupt. I know it, but at this level, I'd rather, you know, I'm not going to say how can I phrase this eloquently. I'm just trying to do the right thing all the way around for my ancestors and for my own kids.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, if I'm voting right now to get Trump out of there, then that's what I'm doing. It doesn't make me less of a human rights follower. I just know that he shouldn't be in office.
Well, me personally, I'd rather have him in office because he's not, how can I say it? He's not, what's the word I want to say? I'll just say he's not groomed properly. Because Obama was groomed properly. Obama could do the same thing Trump did, and everybody would love him because he knows how to articulate and go around, whereas Trump is just straightforward and throw it in your face. So from my aspect, I'm like, I'd rather, because our people, we all programmed. We all been part of the programming. I mean, we couldn't avoid it because we didn't have control of it unless we were grown. But the programming starts as soon as you're born, almost, pretty much, with baby's first Christmas. So we're programmed to be part of this whole matrix, and you don't have a clue unless your parents schooled you behind the scenes. So you don't really have a clue unless you just so happen to get knowledge dropped on you from somewhere. So
exactly.
We've been programmed to do all this, but at this point, it's a thing of using logic. So, like, for me, I'm saying I'd rather have Trump because he's what we're supposed to look at as an opposition. But if we have a Obama or whatever the lady name who's for vice president,
we're going to
be the opposite of rednecks. We become blacknecks. We put all our interests aside because we see a black face in a high position. Whereas before we could see a white face and we'll be like, okay, we know we're going to get screwed. But now we drop all of our guard because that person is black, because we're shallow in looking at color and not understanding we're up against a system that's greater than a color or greater than a gender. But our emotions get us caught up in gender, color, sorority, whatever, all that stuff that go along with it. And I yield the floor.
I got you. I totally understand.
What's this thing like?
I totally understand. But I wasn't trying to talk for real, Darren. I wasn't going to say nothing.
About calling in?
Uh-huh, because you said if you want to listen in. I mean, I wasn't going to say a word.
It caught me off guard.
I think she said 5-0. The second time, she said 5-1, so I knew it was me.
Yeah. But she's still on the line because we're calling in through her line. I don't know what happened on her end.
But I appreciate your view, and your view is my view as well. And I see it, you know. I just feel as though when Obama was in office, the white man wouldn't let him do anything. They would not allow him to be the president he wanted to be. But, you know, that's just how I feel. And that means that voting a black person in is no different than voting a white person in, because the black person is not going to have any say-so, period.
Yeah.
You know,
and
he's
like,
going to be black, regardless of whether he's president or not. He's going to be always black. And I get that. But when you see Biden with a black woman, they're going to listen to Biden's self. I was going to say something bad. They're going to listen to Biden, you know.
Yeah, but
I don't
know.
I'm kind of just lost with that whole, you know, with that whole situation, because that's what I'm founded off of, voting.
And I'm looking at it like those the people that have no positions are temporary. But this country has been marching to the same beat for the last 45 presidents. So it's like we get caught up in that person, but the system keeps doing what they've been doing to us regardless of who's in that office. And it's kind of like, look at it like a job. If you want to keep on that level, if you want to keep living, you're going to do what they tell you to do. But on our level, if you want to keep bringing the paycheck home to support your family, you're going to do what they want you to do. No matter what you portray into the world, it's a whole different game behind doors. Because they're actors.
Yeah,
I mean, Trump,
and that's a little different for me because, you know, if I really don't want to do it, I'm not going to. You can't make me. I can't fall into what everybody else does.
Right.
But I'm feeling you. I got you.
Right.
I feel you 100%. Don't think I don't. Mm-hmm. But that's my whole dilemma. And when I first joined the human rights, that was a dilemma back then, too, you know. So I'm in a whole different, I guess, space, you know, where
mm-hmm.
I'm seeing everything come together.
Mm-hmm.
I just ran up a couple of times. At the same point, I'm just like, I just want to do the right thing.
Right.
For my ancestors, definitely mm-hmm. for my parents, and for my
mm-hmm.
kids.
Yeah, just follow your heart. It'll lead you.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's sacrifice ain't the same sacrifice. So don't let that get to you either.
And I have a son who hasn't voted. He's known. He'll be 25 in January. He's not voted not one time. You know, he says he doesn't make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. And that's a human rights violation in itself. I mean, why do we need our right to vote renewed every 50 years? What's the matter?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying I agree with the system.
No, I'm not saying that.
The system is definitely messed up.
Right.
It's definitely messed up, and we've all been conditioned to deal with what they dish out. I'm not saying
mm-hmm.
I'm not willing to sacrifice my life to make a change for my kids, because I am. I just don't want any unmeaningful sacrifices. That's all.
Right.
If I can come home at the end of the day instead of not coming home, I just want to make sure I come home. That's it. And I want to do what I have to do as a policy officer as well. So,
right.
You know, like I said, I grew up on civil rights. I didn't know anything about human rights until I connected with you guys. I knew in my heart the difference between right and wrong. I knew police brutality was wrong. I knew slavery was wrong. I knew all of this stuff, but everything is coming in full fruition for me. Right now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's just where I am.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be who I am, and I'm going to keep fighting for human rights because that's what I believe in. So,
right. It's a process. It's a process.
Mm-hmm.
But you'll be fine.
That's like, the guy y'all pointed out this morning, what was his name? I'm having my senior years at this moment. But Dick Gregory?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I had never heard of Dick Gregory before, so y'all made me go research him. He's written several books. So,
yeah, he's deep. He's deep.
Yeah, so
he just died like a year or two ago.
Yeah.
But he had knowledge. He had knowledge like, okay, why is he still living? When he used to say stuff, he'd be like, oh. So he has some deep knowledge.
Okay. Well,
he's one of the first.
On him. He seems like he's an awesome individual. Really.
Yeah, he was.
And he spoke his mind. And he didn't care what anybody said. And I like
right.
that.
Yeah, because he used to come on the radio up until he basically died. Because I used to listen to Carl Nelson and stuff. And he used to say, my number right in the phone book. I don't need no security. I used to be like, wow. He lived right here in D.C. Right here in D.C.
Yeah, that's a man really, really standing. But I can actually say on a call that we had, I wasn't afraid to give out my number and stuff. And Random Zoop was like, only, you know, you don't give out your entire number. But, yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm believing in what I'm fighting for. And I am fighting, believe it or not. But I'm just, when it comes to the whole election coming up, I'm a little frazzled. And I have some concerns. And, yeah. And I'm not evil. I don't want to feel as though if I vote, I'm evil, because I'm really bad. I'm just trying to feel.
That's the hook. But that is getting a lot of people's attention. Say that the people get their attention, for real.
But I got my attention. But it's alright. So did she come back yet?
No, I haven't heard her yet. So, I mean, I guess we can get off. If you don't come back, well, we can get off.
All right, well, thank you for the recipe. I greatly appreciate it. It's going to save me plenty of money. You can believe that.
Yeah, I'm going to write that down myself, because that's the recipe everybody wants.
Yeah. It has no measurements, though. I don't know how to measure it. I guess I got to figure it out.
Yeah, you don't need but so much, because all of those are like spices and stuff.
Uh-huh. So it's cool.
And you be safe,
yeah.
Sis.
You too. Thank you for inviting me to the call. All right.
No problem. Peace.
Peace.